Connor McPherson has been visiting New York in recent years for the openings of his powerful plays, Shining City, The Seafarer, and Port Authority. He's been hailed as quite possibly the finest playwright of his generation. But this time, however, he's here for a film he directed and co-wrote called The Eclipse. The wonderful actor Kieran Hines stars in it as the widower Michael Farr. The Eclipse opens today at the Angelica, and I'm really thrilled that it's brought both of them to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Connor, this isn't the first film you've ever directed. How many have there been?
This was the fourth film I directed, but it was the first one I directed in about 7 years, which will show you how well it was going for me. It was really good to take that amount of time, actually, before doing this movie, because I think it's on a whole other level to what I did before, really. I don't think I really had the hang of it before, but...
So have you learned things just about where to move the camera and things like that?
Yeah, precisely. And also the different levels of storytelling between theatre and cinema and, the wonderful potential that cinema gives you with actors, which is different to theatre. They're both great, but they're very different.
Well, it would have been very difficult to tell this story on a stage, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would have been, because really it's a story which relies on a sort of an internal journey in many ways. In the case of Kieran's character, who's being visited by very strange apparitions, which he's trying to make sense of and is very confused by, and Kieran effectively portrays it with very little dialogue.
You also can move all over the place, and I wonder about writing for the stage. I mean, there are wonderful things about theater, but it also must be frustrating at times when you realize that the only way that you could pull something off is if you had a $1 million budget to be able to do anything you wanted on the set.
Well, that's it. I mean, what's wonderful about the theater is that it's the live experience. It's a nightly ritual, which has its own magic. But the limitations of it are that it has to be necessarily very compressed, and it has to work in front of us right now. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen. So while that has an amazing concentration and compression about it, really, if you can't make it work within these 90 minutes or 2 hours in this room right now, you can't tell that story.
Well, Kieran, the last time you were in New York was on Broadway in Connor's play, The Seafarer.
No? Yeah, that's right. We finished it a couple of years ago.
And you were playing a character who wasn't what he seems to be at first.
That's right. He just went by the name Mr. Lockhart, but turned out to be a version of the devil. Yeah.
In this film, Michael, the character you play, is very much what he seems to be.
Yeah, I mean, Connor wrote this script with a real person from a short story by Billy Roach, but it was sort of based on reality, the possibility of a man sort of unbalanced by grief. He's not on steady ground, and he's bringing up his two kids, and his wife has recently passed away through cancer, and he has to deal with a lot of emotional and psychologically unbalanced things. Visitations are coming to him. He's not quite sure where he is, and he has
although
to
deal he's a very normal kind of person.
He's a teacher of woodwork in the local school. He's probably he enjoys reading and. Probably has tried writing himself, but he's very modest about it. He doesn't have any pretensions, particularly to be a writer.
When you're working with Connor in theater, is he very different than he is when you're working with him on a film?
No. I suppose the essence of this always remains the same. It's just the crafting of it is slightly different because it involves a different way. When you use a camera, there's a whole different story going on as to when you... I suppose when we work together in rehearsal, there's a team of actors all building up their energies, their musculation together to produce this two-hour, two-and-a-half-hour pageant, story, whatever, to share at the same time. And filmmaking requires a very different discipline. And, of course, Connor being the director, but also the writer on stage, is the composer-conductor, but then when it comes to the film, there's not just the writing and the directing, the camera, he has to liaise with the departments, the costume, the makeup, sound. There's a whole party of departments he has to deal with.
Although, Connor, you do double on some things. You were involved in doing the music as well, the musical soundtrack.
Yeah, well, given the constraints of our budget, is pretty.
That's the only reason.
Pretty low budget movie, but I suppose the thing is, if we had the budget, I probably wouldn't have been allowed to be involved in the music. So it's a pretty good excuse to get your hands dirty there. My wife and I, we play music at home, just for fun. We really enjoy it, and Fionnuala, my wife, mostly composed a lot of the score. And it's very beautiful choral music, which I think just really helps to heighten the sort of gothic atmosphere of this kind of spooky movie.
Well, there have been a number of directors who've composed for their films. If I remember correctly, Satyajit Ray did, Kurosawa did.
Clint Eastwood.
Ah, right.
Yeah, John Carpenter. There's a bunch of...
So do you think there's some kind of connection between the two?
Well, I think music is such a deep emotional art form, and I think cinema especially is such a personal vision a lot of the time. I can't imagine how a director couldn't want to have at least a large input into the music, and if they could at all, to try and actually write it. So it was a great feeling to be able to do that, a real feeling of completion and very fulfilling.
In going back and forth between film and theater, Karen, of course, one of the big differences many actors talk about is that you have to act a lot bigger on the stage than you do in film. In film, you can just blink an eye, and it has real significance.
I don't know. Inherently, the difference is not. It's just about acting, but indeed, you have to go through some kind of emotional journey on stage or on camera. The difference, to me, simply is about learning to big it up a little and to share it, to offer it up out there at the same time. So it's heightened, whereas the camera, you just want to try and be in a place where it observes you. You don't want to be caught performing it.
Although I've always wondered about the difficulties of acting out of sequence in the theater. You start at the beginning of the play and you end at the end.
Yeah, you sort of...
In
you
film,
don't...
except in rare cases, you're shooting all over the place.
Yeah, in fact, it's never shot in sequence because it's the location that determines, because of the budget. You shoot everything that's in that location, whether it's the first scene, the middle scene, and the end scene. Then you go somewhere else and fill in the rest. I suppose emotional journey, you just got to keep an eye on it. And... put your trust in the director. He'll keep an eye on you as well.
My guests are Karen Hines, the wonderful actor who is playing Michael Farr in Connor McPherson's latest film called The Eclipse. Connor McPherson, director and co-writer of the screenplay with Billy Roche, also on the soundtrack, playing guitar, bass, and drums. My gosh. Now, is this a rarity for you, Connor, to do something from somebody else's story?
Yeah, it's pretty rare for me. Normally, I would just think up an idea and just write it and then bring it to the stage or whatever I'm going to bring it to. In this case, Billy Roche, who's a great friend of mine, and he's an Irish playwright, he was writing a book of short stories, and he was emailing me them as he completed each one. And he sent me this one, which was set against the backdrop of a literary festival, and it concerned a teacher who... is a volunteer at the festival in this little Irish town, and he's driving this writer around, this lady who he becomes kind of obsessed with. And
he's grieving from the loss of his wife. He's a single parent now because he has the two kids.
Yeah, in Billy's original story, he was married and his wife was alive. But, but it was actually my wife again, Fionnuala, who had a huge input. She said, you know, Connor... she was reading the screenplay and she said, in a story, when we follow a character who's becoming obsessed with somebody, we can sympathize with them and understand them because we're in their mind, she said. But if this is a movie, women watching this guy who's married and has kids sort of becoming obsessed with another woman, they just won't like this guy. So she said, why don't you maybe get rid of his wife somehow? So we made him a widower, which completely changed the whole dynamic of the story. It changed it really completely, but the backbone of Billy's story is still there.
Was Billy Roach happy that you did that to his story? Because he's a collaborator on the film.
Yeah, he really was happy with it. And Billy's in the film. He's really good in it. He plays the guy who's organizing the whole festival. And Billy and I are great friends. And he was really thrilled with the result.
The film is a mix of genres, at least as I said. How would you describe it?
Yeah, I think it's really a love story and a ghost story, all wrapped up sort of inextricably, really. Michael is a man who's a widower, he's grieving, he He's trying to bring up his two kids. He's experiencing strange supernatural occurrences in his house late at night. So it has that very spooky element. But I think the film leaves it open as to whether perhaps these are manifestations of things that need to be addressed that he hasn't quite dealt with, or are they coming from the beyond?
Well, the supernatural keeps on popping up in your work, especially in Shining City and The Seafarer. How would you explain the appeal of that for you?
Well, to me, it's what I'm drawn to, I think, probably because as a writer, I just find that putting characters, pitching them against the unknown is, for me, a very effective way of representing what life feels like to me. I think we're always all dealing with the unknown and dealing with the confusion and the mystery of being alive and trying to figure out where we're going. Sometimes we feel like we're in control and other times we feel like we don't have a clue. And it's a very effective metaphor, I think, for unfinished business or things we're longing for, things we're afraid of, things we regret. And I think audiences often have a hunger for that. It takes them into that place in a deep way quite quickly and usually quite effectively.
Well, the character that Michael is obsessed with, Lena Morell, writes horror books, and she says in a lecture that when you see a ghost, the brain splits in two. One side accepts it, the other side says it isn't real. Yes. And that's something you're playing with in this.
Yes, and she says, and in that moment, reality is collapsed and reconfigured in a way that changes you profoundly, but at the time you're not aware of it. And I think that's what's happening to Michael. He's not aware that something profound has happened to him.
Is this the kind of ghost we find in Irish literature, or the kind of ghost that, because in some ways it reminded me of the supernatural elements that I've been seeing in Hong Kong and Korean films in recent years?
Yes, it seems that in and also in Spanish movies, we're getting a lot of it in Mexican movies. Yeah, there's something cultural, I think, in Ireland. There's a fascination with the spiritual. There's a fascination with fairies and the supernatural. I think it's probably one of the reasons that Catholicism took root so readily in Ireland, because that seems like such a superstitious religion with all its ghosts and gory images, fear of damnation, heaven, hell, evil. And, of course, when you're being indoctrinated with that kind of stuff when you're a little kid who's 5 or 6, it tends to kind of get in there in a way that's very hard to shift.
Karen, there's a scene in the film where Aidan Quinn, who plays a very self-involved American author, criticizes a film director who's made a movie from one of his books for cutting a key scene, as though he had a lot of nerve. Actors sometimes feel the same way, don't they? I've spoken to a number of actors who've said, you know, I worked really hard on this movie, and then when the director called me and said, well, you know, you're now in just about 2 seconds of the movie.
I do always believe is the director's prerogative, finally. I mean, they are the eye, the objective eye, who's conducting the whole story. And, of course, actors, we offer things up, and in the end, the director has to, when he comes to the editing, to make sense of the rhythm, the movement, the emotion of it. And sometimes that can mean sacrificing, which might be some very good work, some very good scenes, but for the benefit of the whole. I mean, indeed, we shot scenes and that have disappeared. It's not to say, I don't know whether they were good or bad, but just in Connor's perspective and rhythm and how he saw it all, they just had to go, because you do need to drive something through, and you could suddenly find out it's a fantastic scene. It's just not in the way. I just very briefly say I worked with the great Steven Spielberg once in the film Munich, and we were... You find out that Steven Spielberg is so well prepared and so experienced. He knows exactly almost how he's going to cut it and edit it. And there was a scene between the 5 protagonists, and he said, we were doing an early morning shoot, he said, I love this scene. I adore this scene. Tony Kushner has written this beautifully. This isn't the whole structure of the piece. But for some reason, I don't think I use it in the story, but I want to shoot it because it's a lovely scene. And sure enough, we spent 3 hours shooting it, a beautiful early morning light at 6 a.m. by a river, and it wasn't in the film.
Connor, don't you wish you had that kind of budget? You
could do that. Yeah, let's do it anyway.
Well, you've been in some pretty good movies over the years. Excalibur, the Cook and the Thief, His Wife and Her Lover, There'll Be Blood, and you were in Persuasion, my favorite Jane Austen adaptation. I thought that was just the one that was closest to the spirit of Jane Austen?
Yeah, I think, strangely enough, I'd worked with Roger Michell, the director, in the theatre at the Royal Shakespeare Company, and indeed I'd worked for the writer Nick Deer, who adapted it in the theatre at the Royal Shakespeare Company, and indeed almost everybody in the company did.
Now, you studied law, didn't you?
Rather briefly, for a couple of months. I realised this was going to be a heck of a journey, studying the Northern Ireland legal system, which had been abolished the year before, so I sort of took a different route.
And, Connor, didn't you study philosophy?
I did. I'm still studying philosophy.
Well, do you see the influence of all of those studies on your work, do you think?
Yeah, philosophy is a great subject for me. I think it taught me very quickly. I mean, the biggest message of philosophy is we don't know anything. And it sort of puts you in a very humbling situation when you realize that nothing you know is really very certain. And I love exploring that in stories, which is, I think, why I love the supernatural, because it takes us right there very quickly.
And you did a stage adaptation of Daphne du Maurier, who's a great supernatural writer. Her Birds, didn't you? The book that Alfred Hitchcock made into a film?
Yeah, just last October at the Dublin Theatre Festival, we did an adaptation of her story.
Was Kieran in there?
Kieran was in it, and the great Sinead Cusack. Oh.
Do you have the Rod Taylor part?
I suppose I did, although Cotter had radically reinterpreted from the Daphne du Maurier and went on his own fantastic.
But you can't train birds to attack people on stage. No,
but we can train them to fly around enough to scare people.
In this film, though, you say you were working on a tight budget, but you found incredible locations. Is this an area you know well?
I had never actually spent any time in that particular area. We sent our location scout around, and he took photographs of all the coastal seaside towns in Ireland. And Cove, where we filmed, it's a very historic place, and it had a lot of lovely Gothic architecture, which we needed for the ghostly atmosphere of the film. And it's a very vertical town built on a hill with lots of steps, which was great for filming.
Did you have Kieran in mind for the lead from the start?
I had Kieran in mind as we were sort of halfway through the writing of the script, yes, and it really helped me to focus the writing process.
And obviously Aidan Quinn had a lot of fun playing one of the more obnoxious, although we've all met writers like that. I suspect you met a couple at various conferences yourself.
Aidan really relished playing this part because it's a character who's in a kind of, I suppose, a lot of pain. He's very panicky, he's very vain, he's very egotistical, he sort of is not very pleasant, he's very rude. He's one of those people, I suppose, who, not that fame and success has changed, but fame and success has revealed who he really is, and so he's sort of has given him a huge license to just have an unfettered ego trip.
Thank you both so much for being with us. Connor McPherson, director, co-author of the screenplay with Billy Roach, and also appearing on the soundtrack of his new film called The Eclipse, which stars Kieran Hines, who plays Michael Farr. It opens today at the Angelica. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.